This morning I have a reading for you that I've used once or twice before, but I thought it's lovely. The story. Once upon a time there was a Buddhist monk who deeply desired to found a new monastery. He spent 15 years walking through poor villages, collecting thousands of minuscule contributions from peasants. And when he had enough money to start building, there was a terrible famine. And so he gave all that he had saved to provide food for the hungry. Another 15 years passed, and once again the monk had saved enough for his monastery. This time, alas, a series of devastating floods ravaged the region, and his savings went to rebuild the homes. Another 15 years passed, and as luck would have it, this time everything was going pretty well. No floods or famines, wars or forest fires or plagues. And when the monk's monastery was completed, a visitor exclaimed how beautiful it was. "Yes," said the monk, "it is lovely. But you should have seen the first two." It's a pleasure for me to introduce Catherine this morning, our guest speaker, Catherine Heckman. I first met Catherine in the context of interfaith work here in the city of Halifax. Catherine tells me that her family immigrated to Nova Scotia in 1754 and that she's lived in Dartmouth all of her life. She's a retired environmental lawyer, and Catherine has meditated all of her adult life, and she started to practice in the Shambhala Buddhist tradition in 1987. She's very active in teaching classes at the Shambhala Center. She's also active in interfaith groups here in Halifax, and she recently retired as the interim director of the Shambhala Center in Halifax. I invite Catherine to our pulpit.
Thank you. When Norm asked me to come and speak to you, it is with great pleasure and honor that I accepted this invitation. Hi. I've been here before, but never standing here. So, since your theme this month is attention, it seemed like a lovely opportunity to come and share the Shambhala Buddhist approach to developing attention. The notion is that we already have innate qualities in our mind, in our heart, in our brains that are full of attention. We call it mindfulness and awareness, which are, mindfulness is a trendier word nowadays than attention, but same thing. So I thought I would start with a question that Norm used in one of his recent sermons. He shared some of the past, what do you call them, service, the order of service?
Oh, yes.
And the question that was asked by Norm was, what can we do to give our life meaning that transcends ego and concept, that does not come from dogma and opinions? So this is a central question to be explored in the Buddhist path, and in the Shambhala Buddhist path in particular here in Halifax. The word Buddha actually means awake. So that's not operating on habit or just regurgitating someone else's wisdom. It's this notion that we are awake to the present moment because we've used our own innate wisdom and touched the innate wisdom of other beings. In fact, the historical Buddha, Shakyamuni Buddha, was said to have always prefaced his teachings with, "Don't trust what I say, find it out for yourself." And so the vehicle that we use for that is meditation. Not to say that we don't have prayer and contemplation, but meditation is the main skillful means, or the main method that we use to develop attention. And the Buddha is an example. Excuse me. The Buddha is an example to us of a caring, caring, clear-minded person who's living in harmony with himself and his other friends, neighbors, strangers, and the environment altogether. The traditional teachings say that Buddha was brought up in a palace and not exposed to much suffering, if any, but that he stepped outside of the palace walls and he saw all this suffering in many forms of sickness, aging, death, and set out on a spiritual path to try to find a way that he could help with that suffering. And after venturing and becoming adept at various different spiritual paths, he settled on really honing in and working with the power of meditation as a method to connect with our innate wisdom and cultivate compassion. So as is shown in this slide, this first slide, there can be some beautiful moments in life. As your saying says on the front door, if we have the eyes to see them. So the notion here is that often we miss special little moments in our life, like a beautiful blue Himalayan poppy with dew on it. And we just, the hustle and the bustle and the practicality of life often means we've tuned out to those things. But the answer to the question, how can we give our life meaning, for a Buddhist is we can relate with everything that crosses our path. We can open our hearts and open our minds and allow those perceptions to let us appreciate the interconnectedness of all beings and of each moment. In the next slide, the Dalai Lama, which you may all know is a leader, political leader and spiritual leader of the Buddhist community worldwide, makes this point clear when he says there are only 2 days in the year that nothing can be done, yesterday and tomorrow. So today is the right day to love, today is the right day to believe, today is the right day to live, and in fact, this very moment of this very day. So if it is so critical to giving meaning and purpose to life, it seems important to train our mind. We train our bodies, so it would be perhaps a useful approach to providing our life and the lives of everyone else on the planet with a sense of purpose and meaning, if we were to develop that innate wisdom and allow us to perceive all moments directly, without filters, without all the negative emotions, without the hustle, the bustle, the speed. We can drift through our whole life without being present. But at the same time, we know that there are moments, like when you had your reflection here and Norm rang the gong, which you call the singing bowl, you're back. Traditionally, we say there are moments in nature, like a clap of thunder. We can be completely immersed in our thoughts and totally unsynchronized with our body, and just da-da-da-da-da-da, telling ourselves a story rather than being present to what's actually happening in our life. But then there can be some sudden, sharp moment that just brings us back. So we know we all have the potential to be present, to come back to whatever is happening. Anyone can do this. There is no spiritual training necessary. You don't have to be a religious person of any kind. But it's important to take the time to make it a priority from our point of view if we really value attention, to learn what is mind and how does it work. And the meditation practice allows the space, so as I explained to the children, the waves, the appearances, the thoughts, the emotions that we often think are who we are can settle And then we can connect with our, what some might call our divinity. Buddhist is a non-theistic religion, if it's a religion at all, it's more of a way of life. But you connect with what we call the fundamental basic ground, so the ocean that's under the waves. And that allows us to develop an allegiance to what is our true nature and have confidence in that, so that we can choose to pay attention because we are developing our mind, allowing it to go that way more often. Because there's a third slide. The Cookie Monster. I don't do good impressions, but people say to me all the time, so if our true nature is this strong, clear, stable, kind, luminous, brilliant essence, why don't we just rest there? And Pema Chodron is famous for saying, because we don't want to. Because life isn't just beautiful blue Himalayan poppies. There are very difficult moments. There are mundane moments. All of those kinds of things. So as the Cookie Monster says, today me will live in the moment unless it is unpleasant. In which case, me will eat a cookie. So we often look for distraction or entertainment to take us away from unpleasant moments that are not sunsets or poppies or something. And that makes our life very small because there is so much suffering. Norm provided me with an ample sampling of liturgical comments from people in your tradition, and one of them resonated with me as something that sort of talks about this. So Reverend Karen Johnston, who you may know, but she tells the story of all winter long not noticing these three uninhabited bird's nests on her property, and then the spring comes and she notices them, and she's like, oh, but it gives her this insight, like, what else do I not notice, and why do I not notice? And what she said is, my hustling and my bustling mind prevents me from sensing. My guess is it's not just delightful bird's nests, but the sorrows too. Exclusion, oppression, sickness, aging, and death. So there are sometimes reasons why we avoid being present. But, as I said, it makes our life very small, and in the long run, deprives us of a sense of meaning and purpose. So in the next slide, there's a diagram here to show the meditator's approach to relating with our mind and getting to know the mind, tuning in to what is actually happening, paying attention to reality. And the word meditation in Tibetan is gom, and literally gom means getting familiar with. So these are the layers of discursiveness that are found in most beings' hearts and heads. So there's our life, and there's the fantasies, and there's the emotions, discursive thoughts, subtle thoughts, and then there's the peaceful abiding. The still lake is often the analogy of that. You're going to have to cue me about time because I've lost track. So these qualities of mind, we often think, I just want to get to the center of that circle. But as I was explaining to the children, that's actually not the approach. It's really getting to know, getting familiar with our mind, not creating an enemy out of it, but just like we would treat our friend with kindness and caring, we treat ourselves and our mind, and we notice, today I'm really in that fantasy realm, or, today it's kind of quiet, just a few subtle thoughts. No judgment. All is good, all is fine. But eventually, just like I explained to the children, the mud settles out, and gradually, with practice, we settle into that clear nature of our mind. Next slide. So, by going through this process, which is a gradual process, and some days are, it's not a linear process either. You all come here each week and do a short period of meditation, and you've probably experienced some of that very discursive mind. Some days and other days it's in the peaceful abiding range. So that is the journey. But at the same time as we let go of a goal, there is a fruition, there is an end point, which is this more peaceful abiding, as I mentioned. And in this way, we are making our mind a nice place to be because we're making friends with it. As the caption says, we live most of our life inside of our head, for better or for worse. So we should make sure it's a nice place to be. And this doesn't mean that we should just think good thoughts and have good emotions. We're to be genuine and authentic. We need not act on the negative emotions or thoughts, but we need to acknowledge they arise, like the wave, they arise, they dwell, they cease. And that's how we get to know our mind. And it's the process of getting to know our mind that makes it a nice place to be. Because we can create that welcoming atmosphere for all other beings that we interact with and be present for them. So the next one. So this is a quote from Chögyam Trungpa, who is the founder of Shambhala Buddhism, in our sort of central text, The Sacred Path of the Warrior. And it's basically describing this process that I've just outlined to you about making friends with the activities of our mind and learning to be kind to ourselves and appreciating the texture and the quality of the different moments of mind as an experience. He says, our life is an endless journey. It is like a broad highway that extends infinitely in the distance. The practice of meditation provides a vehicle to travel on that road. Our journey consists of ups and downs, hope and fear, but it is a good journey. The experience of meditation allows us to experience all the textures of the roadway, which is what the journey is all about. So that last part is the key. So our life gets bigger, it gets faster. We can accommodate all the suffering, all the textures of the roadway. They are a part of our life. They are the purpose. They are what gives it meaning. So we talk about this being a path not only of gentleness, of bravery as well. It's a very simple act. We sit with a good posture. We tune in to what we're feeling, what we're thinking. Maybe we focus on our breathing. It's a very, very simple act. But it has profound consequences. It gives our life meaning and purpose. It helps us create a better place to live for all beings and helps us make choices that are full of compassion and wisdom as we experience that quality of our mind more fully. It was always there. We just overlooked it. So I wanted to close with the last slide, which is a poem by John Wellwood, and it's basically a guided meditation. So I thought if we take whatever time that takes, 30 seconds, you could take a good posture and we could just do some meditation here to close. And I'll read through the poem as the guided meditation. Sit down wherever you are. Listen to the wind singing in your veins. Feel the love, the longing, the fear in your bones. Open your heart to who you are right now. not who you would like to be, not the saint you are striving to become, but the being right here before you, inside you, around you. All of you is holy. You are already more and less than whatever you know. Breathe out. Touch in. Let go.